Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Quantum Spirituality on DreamVision7RadioNetwork.com, the show where past spiritual wisdom and present-day science merge to show us our future. Your host is Peter Canova, author of the 25-time award-winning book series, The First Souls Trilogy, available on Amazon, and Peter's website, PeterCanova.com. That's PeterCanova.com. This show is a live video, so if you're only listening and want to watch, go to Peter's website, PeterCanova.com, PeterCanova.com, where you can access his Facebook page to leave comments or questions, and click the D7RN link where you can receive a free gift video.
Hello, friends, followers, and listeners. I'm your host from Quantum Spirituality, Peter Canova. This is the show where the past and the present merge to unlock the mysteries of our future. I just want to remind our new listeners that you may want to go back and listen to the first three shows because this show builds one episode on the other. It's kind of instructional in a way. And in the first three episodes in particular, we provide a framework to understand some of the issues that we speak of on quantum physics and on spirituality in the later episodes. So we have a great show lined up for you today. And without any further delay, please listen to it and enjoy. And join us every Tuesday, first Tuesday of every month for Quantum Spirituality.
The March of Time. On a thousand fronts, the history of the world moves swiftly forward. A thousand new facts, new details in the world's history come into being every hour.
We commonly think of time as energy or an object in space moving from point A to point B. In fact, we can have two clocks or two stopwatches simultaneously measure the duration it takes for that object to get from point A to point B, and they'll be in complete agreement. We can conclude from this that time moves in a linear direction, and the experience or the perception of time is something universal to all observers. And if you believe what you just heard, you would be wrong. Albert Einstein's theory of general relativity told us that time is affected by other factors like gravity or velocity. An observer or an object that is moving at high speeds or accelerated rates will experience time more slowly than an observer or object in a resting state. Now let's take an example to illustrate some points about time. Say you're sitting around a nighttime campfire under a starry sky. The campfire, the fire itself, and the area around it are in your immediate time. This would be, let's say, in our conception of linear time happening from point A to point B, happening in what we consider to be standard time. But now you look up into the heavens and you see all these stars. Now you appear to be looking at them all simultaneously. They're like side by side, right? Or they appear to be side by side. But what's actually happening is you're looking at these stars the way they were hundreds of thousands of years ago. And one star that might appear near another, you might be looking at it as it appeared 10,000 years ago, and the one next to it 35,000 years ago. And the reason is because that is how long it takes their respective photons of light to reach us here on Earth. So what it really indicates is that our concept of linear time is kind of like a bubble. It's very localized. But when you try and expand it on a larger level, that idea of linear time and being, you know, universal to all observers, it really starts to break down. What this indicates is that time is not a fundamental property of reality. It's dependent on other deeper forces that are at work here. So just what are those forces? Well, they would be consciousness and light energy. And those forces lead to the manifestations of space, matter, motion, and time. So let's discuss how all of this works. So the idea of consciousness being the fundamental property of reality, the thing that everything is based on, is both a mystical view, especially the Gnostics, which we talk a lot about on this show, But it's also the belief of a growing number of scientists in a movement called panpsychism, where they are starting to recognize or believe that everything in the universe contains some degree of consciousness. So time itself, in effect, somehow must also be a property of consciousness. But consciousness itself, we have to sort of imagine, well, what exactly is consciousness? So let's talk about that for a minute. And this is an interesting question. In science, this is known as the hard problem. A lot of scientists just want to avoid any discussion of this at all, because, you know, it's not something they can touch, feel, and test in a lab, and they don't like that. But if we were to imagine consciousness, it would have to be something that there contains no space, no time. It's just being, or I should say, no being or experiencing. It's just existing. It's a static existence. So somehow consciousness must move out of itself to experience. And that means motion. That means change. That means having objects, because without these things, there really can be no experience. It would just be a static existence. There has to be motion. There has to be change. There has to be something in which consciousness contrasts itself to, meaning objects or other points of consciousness, in order to have any kind of meaningful experience. So one thing consciousness does possess, though, is energy, because consciousness is energy. Consciousness is light energy. And consciousness projects or flows that energy outward. And one thing it creates in that outflowing of energy is space. So how does that work? Well, we know today, or we're pretty sure anyway, that space is not a vacuum. It's not a void. It's full of energy, and it's full of matter. It's called dark energy and dark matter. In fact, dark energy and dark matter comprise the vast majority of what space is. Visible matter is just a very, very small percentage of what makes up space, or what's contained in space. And remember that matter itself is a form of energy. That's what Einstein's E equals mc squared has told us, that matter and energy are interchangeable, and matter is simply a form of energy vibrating at a lower frequency. So that when we talk about dark energy and dark matter, and they're called dark because they don't interact with visible light, so we can't really see them. We have to really sort of detect their footprints rather than directly view them. But dark energy and dark matter are both forms of energy, but they perform different functions and they have somewhat different properties. So dark energy expands. It literally is expanding our universe out into infinity. We don't even know where that process of universal expansion is going to stop. So it's an expanding force. Whereas dark matter is the opposite. Dark matter is almost like gravity. It's a cohesive force. It's what allows the matter in space to cluster and clump into things like galaxies and stars and worlds. Our Earth, our existence, without dark matter, it wouldn't happen, because essentially we would just expand ourselves out of existence, break apart into, you know, the molecules or the energy of space. So this dark matter kind of works counter to the dark energy in allowing things to cluster together and form the physical reality that we know of. So we have consciousness creating first space, and then in that space there is all forms of matter. And remember, not all matter is visible. Dark matter is not directly detectable. So there are grosser and finer forms of matter, but it all comes from consciousness, and it all comes from the light energy that propagates from consciousness, because light and energy are the vehicles with which consciousness expresses itself, the vehicles with which consciousness creates. So we now have some of the components that we need to start to begin to understand other phenomena like time. And I should, I, you know, I also should mention at this point something really interesting for those of you that don't understand the concept of how matter is simple is simply a form of energy vibrating in a lower frequency. It's not only Einstein's theory that that spoke of this, but recently scientists at the Brookhaven Laboratories in Long Island actually created matter out of light energy. So even us humans, with our mechanical instruments, have been able to demonstrate what Einstein's formula told us. So matter is most certainly a form of light energy. And to take that a step further, you might ask, well, okay, there's all these things happening there, but how do we experience this in essence a three-dimensional world? How do we you know perceive objects with depth and things of that sort? So let me first say that we see matter, we detect matter by the photons of light that it emits. So basically, if you're looking at an apple, for instance, and we've discussed some of this in previous shows, but if you're looking at an apple, photons of light reflect off that apple and they hit our optic nerves, which then convert those signals in electrochemically into images in the back of our brains. So we never experience direct reality. All we're really experiencing is electrochemical images of things in the deep darkness of our skull, which never sees the light of day. But that's the way we perceive things. But let's take an example. Say that there is an observer and he's looking at three things: a woman who's closest to him, spatially closest to him, and then beyond her there's an elephant, and then off in the distance up on top of the hill there's like a golden temple. So we think we're looking at that panoramic scene and we're taking all of these things in simultaneously, but that's not the way it happens. Just the way we think we see stars up in the heavens simultaneously, but actually we're looking at them in different periods of time. The same thing is happening with objects that are even closer to us. So the photons from the woman would hit our optic system before those of the elephant. Those of the elephant would hit it before the temple in the background. So that differentiation in time of when we perceive these elements is what gives us 3D depth perception. And that's how we view objects three-dimensionally in this world. It's because of the delayed photons of light hitting our eyes at different times. So now we start to get to the whole issue of time and another close phenomena that's tied to it, which is motion. Now, light not only creates space and matter, light does create space and matter, but light doesn't flow continuously. It's emitted in little bundles or packets or frames, if you will, called quanta, which is where we get the term quantum physics from. So let's extrapolate this fact of light being emitted sort of in a staggered manner in these frames or quanta of light. Let's take a kind of a cosmic example of that. So let's say source consciousness is a projector, like a movie projector, because that's our source. And it emits the light, which illuminates the frames of film. Now, if you've seen what a frame of film looks like, essentially it's little self-contained squares of images, but they're separated by a dark gap in between them. So what we're really looking at when we see the film in its true state are single static snapshots. There's no motion involved in it. But when you connect those static images through the medium of these time intervals, these quanta of light, you're stringing them together, and as they emit, just like the way frames or flip animation works, you know, with a movie, they come to life on the screen and they give the appearance of motion. but all they are is staggered images or single images that are being perceived sequentially by us to give the illusion of motion. And this is where the whole notion of time comes in with light on a kind of a cosmic level here, because it's in the nature of light itself to be emitted in these packets or frames, not continuously. But that, in a way, I guess you could say, is the trick of how a phenomenon like a static consciousness, a source consciousness, and incidentally, you can use any name you want with this. You can call it God, supreme consciousness, the first cause, whatever really makes you comfortable. The point is, it's consciousness, and it's the basis for everything. So how does this static single point of consciousness, create all this 3D motion and everything else? Well, we've discussed, space and time, space and matter in that equation. And now we see it does it by emitting the light sequentially, which you could say is where time comes in on a cosmic level. Allows us to see these images or to experience the light in a sequential way strung together that gives us the perception of a moving, changing world in three dimensions, and as we experience it here as human beings. So, it's a cosmic light show. It's a form of illusion. And you know that many scientists are coming out now to express the fact that they believe we're living in a holographic universe, a matrix, basically a virtual reality matrix. And all these things we've talked about are the components of how that all works. So, it's kind of a really cool thing when you really think about it. We always say in this show, as it is above, so it is below. So, the way life and reality works, maybe the way we got clued in how to develop things like movies and holograms. We're just following the universe as an example.
The First Souls Trilogy, one of the most highly awarded fictional independent book series on the market, is a grand vision of human evolution. It chronicles the first spirit consciousness to enter the material world in three page-turning novels that introduce a new paradigm of reality based on genuine ancient wisdom and quantum science. These inspirational thrillers will force you to rethink the nature of the world in which we live. Visit the PeterCanova.com website for information and ordering. In a world facing annihilation, a miraculous African nun rises to become the first female pope through a web of war, murder, and betrayal. Loved by some, hated by many, she becomes the deadly target of Islamic terrorists and her own cardinals as she introduces a new vision that will either save humanity or accelerate its destruction. Four people must race against a nuclear holocaust to learn her astonishing secret. Pope Annalisa is available at PeterCanova.com, Amazon, and other online booksellers and bookstores worldwide.
Why are we here? How can we be happy? Questions asked from millennials to boomers. Crappy to happy. Sacred stories of transformational joy answers them using true stories of grit, grace, and love. James Redfield, author of The Celestine Prophecy, wrote in the foreword, "This book is a seminar about emerging truths and offers grounded solutions through the art of the comeback." Dr. Bernie Siegel, a contributing author, wrote, "Bodies die, but spirits and consciousness survive and recycle." So, grab some tissues, open your book, and prepare to cry and laugh till it heals. Crappy to Happy by Reverend Ariel Patricia and Kathleen O'Keefe Cannabis. Available from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and booksellers worldwide.
How did life start on Earth, and why is there so much suffering? Are we living in a simulated reality like the characters in the Matrix movie? Do parallel dimensions exist alongside ours, influencing our experience? What are the mysterious dark energies that penetrate our universe? Peter Canova folds space and time to bring the twin bookends of ancient wisdom and quantum science into a single focal point, answering these and many other deep mysteries of the creation. Quantum Spirituality can be heard every Tuesday at 10 a.m. and 10 p.m. Eastern and 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Pacific on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network. See the show where past and present merge to show us our future.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Okay, we're back. I'm your host, Peter Canova, and this is Quantum Spirituality. And today we're discussing a number of topics, including the nature of time, space, matter, and consciousness. So I just want to remind everybody that you can learn more about me and my work at my website, petercanova.com. That's P-E-T-E-R-C-A-N-O-V-A.com. And if you have any questions or comments, you can go to my Facebook page, Peter Canova Author, and leave them there. And you can also do the same thing on my website. This is Dream Vision 7 Radio and TV Network, and we're going to get on with our show, Quantum Spirituality. For regular followers of our show, you know that we're always on the lookout for the latest breaking news from the scientific field that coincide or support the spiritual wisdom that we discuss here on Quantum Spirituality, particularly the Gnostic spiritual wisdom, which was so scientific for its day, probably more so than any other tradition I've run across. Well, there was an article very recently that was really pretty exciting, came out, I think, last month, by Larry Silverberg, who was a professor of aeronautical engineering at North Carolina State University. And Professor Silverberg discusses an experimental theory, which he has conducted to prove that there are certain building blocks that exist in the universe that essentially, you know, create our cosmos. And it's kind of remarkable because the first way he describes it is that they envisioned a universe of energy flowing throughout into infinity, filling up space and flowing out into infinity, which is exactly what we just described, the forms of the light energy and forms of dark matter or dark energy filling up space and flowing out and expanding the universe. It's a, you know, a direct correlation to what we just heard in the first segment. But searching for this building block of universal existence, they came across what they call a fragment of energy, as opposed to just a particle or wave function, which is commonly viewed in physics. They came up with this concept of a fragment of energy. And rather than have me describe it, I'm going to have you watch this short video, which will give you a much better idea because you'll get the visuals on it, and then we'll discuss that in a minute.
Physics is about space, time, and substance. What do you see when looking up to space? Particles, waves, or something else? On space's black backdrop, you see stars. If you zoom into the microscale, what do you see? Particles, waves, stars? What you see resembles what you saw at the celestial scale, bright lights separated by darkness. If you zoom back to the macro scale, what do you see now? Particles, waves, stars? You see a tight bundle of stars. Each star is a concentration of energy, distributed over space like a wave and concentrated at its center like a particle. Unlike classical physics, these concentrations of energy are the building blocks on all physical scales. If you zoom in enough on a concentration of energy, you observe the concentrations that it is built of. The ancient Greeks thought that all things were made of earth, water, air, fire, and ether. It was very intuitive. As humans advanced, classical thought took over. Everything was now made up of particles and waves. This was more practical because we could describe behavior with particles and waves, but less intuitive because the particle is a source with nothing around it, and the wave is all around but lacks a source. They are opposites. Modern physics thinks of things differently. It combines the particle and the wave into a unified element called the fragment of energy. The world is thought of as being made up of fragments of energy. Sharing the features of both particles and waves, the fragments are concentrated at their centers like particles and distributed over space like waves. At the celestial scale, they are the stars we see at night. At the macro scale, they bundle together to form distinct objects. And at the micro scale, they are the smallest building blocks of nature.
What you just saw in this video supports so many of the things that we said in the first segment. For one thing, did you notice where it said that the particle is a source with nothing around it, and a wave is all around with no source? So they combine the two, the source, the center, the singularity, with the wave, which is the energy, which is exactly what we just said, how consciousness, or the source of everything, projects itself out into the universe and reality. And they also said in the article about this energy fragment theory that the wave, the energy wave, essentially fills up all space. It flows out and it fills up all space, defining space and creating space, which again is what we said was the action of the source using the light energy in order to create space. So it's pretty remarkable. The other thing that I noticed that kind of blew me away a little bit is, if you saw the previous show, and we talked about fractals in the Mandelbrot set, and how fractals were repetitive fragments evident at the smallest scales that make up larger scales, but they're all in similar sort of images and things like that. When he was zooming in and out of the star energy, at one point, if you stopped it, it really looked like the Mandelbrot fractal there, the kind of heart-shaped Mandelbrot fractal. But to understand a little bit more about how this theory supports the Gnostic view of creation, one of the points that they make in the article is that the little building blocks that they showed, which is the source energy that spreads itself out, it gets weaker are less intense the further it spreads out from the source. Again, this is exactly the way the Gnostics describe the creation of reality. Essentially, they said that there was a consciousness, which of course they call God or the forefather, and basically projected or flowed out its light energy to create other points of consciousness, which they called eons or eternities, were kind of like spiritual beings. You can sort of think of them as angels, roughly similar, but basically other points of consciousness, other centers of consciousness. And each iteration of these, each generation spirit points of consciousness that appeared, contained a little less energy, meaning a little less consciousness and a little less awareness from the source and from the generation of consciousness that preceded it. Sort of like saying, the kids weren't quite as clued in as the parents, and the grandkids even less so, and so forth and so on. But the idea here being that as this source radiated out from its center, the further from the center, the weaker the energy, the weaker the frequency. And this is exactly the process that they're describing here in Professor Silverberg's article on how these energy fragment building blocks operate. So, again, we've said so many times, because this is probably of all the ancient cliches that you've ever heard, as it is above, so it is below, the patterns, the basic fundamental patterns of creation, you know, just get reflected from the smallest to the largest. It's fractal. It's a self-repetitive similarities that are all present in this creational pattern. So to me, this article was very exciting because it just really validated the whole Gnostic conception of how creation proceeded, and it also validated what I've just said in the earlier segment today about how it's this energy that actually creates space. It flows out in lines to essentially push out, expand, and create what we consider space, which is really a bundle of energies vibrating at different frequencies. That's all space really is. Everything is consciousness. Consciousness is energy. Everything is energy, and that includes space, and that includes time. And you saw in here again when you, if you remember, when they zoomed in on this sort of bundle of energy, or this star as they described it, what did you see? You saw little tiny bundles of light, quanta, that we discussed in here, separated by little dark gaps. Remember the analogy of the projector and the frame that we used, and how you know, it was really a bunch of snapshots kind of strung together with dark areas in between, and that was the time sequences. That's the image that you just saw. If you want to rewind and take a look at it, see when they zoomed in what, you know, the microscopic images look like. They were just the way that we described the quanta of light, or the frames. So pretty cool stuff, honestly. It's always nice when you're dealing with heavy stuff or kind of dense stuff like this to see, you know, cross validations from other branches of science, and especially kind of neat when it it echoes the wisdom of people like the Gnostic masters, who went to the other side and brought back their description of reality. It's quite remarkable. So how can we make all this information useful to you personally? Well, I hope by now I've convinced you that light is life. Light is everything. Everything is light. And in truth, we live really in a light continuum. We're very much a part of this light continuum because we are conscious. We were made in the image of our source, and we have consciousness, self-awareness, and we're very much a part of the creation process that occurs in this light continuum as conscious beings. And you can sort of think of this light continuum as a train or a subway running through a station and just going on eternally, but it makes stops. And those little local stops are our existence. We're like bubbles in the stream of light, in the stream of eternal flowing of light. And we get off, but we also get back on when it's our time to go. And light itself propagates in frequencies. And this is very important to understand, because when an object encounters light, one of three things happen. It's absorbed, reflected, or transmitted according to its resonant frequency. So if, for instance, an object has the same frequency as the energy it encounters, that energy will increase or excite the energy within the object, and the result will be heat. If an object is reflected, not so much happens. Light can also be transmitted. Light energy can be transmitted. And think of the whole analogy to healing here. If you're on the same frequency as the healer, who is basically someone who is transmitting the frequency, and you absorb it, that excited energy within you becomes a healing factor. That's why you'll see Reiki masters or other healers, they heal from afar, and the person will often experience a sense of heat. The person who's being healed will experience a sense of heat. because they're resonating on the same frequency and absorbing it. So it's about attuning to higher frequencies. And how do we do that? Well, very interesting study here shows that the average human emits about 20 photons of light per second out of their heart center. But when they send out thoughts of love and healing to others meditating on their heart center, it increases to 100,000 photons a second. That's a 5,000% increase. Phenomenal. So what is going on here? Well, remember the next time you go into your meditative practice that those thoughts of love and peace and healing and service to others, they really do have an effect. You're transmitting something to other people who hopefully will be resonating on the same frequency. And those two frequencies combined create a higher form of energy and a higher form of consciousness. So little by little, we uplift each other according to our thoughts, according to our feelings, and according to how we transmit the native light energy that exists within all of us. It's time for another break. I'm Peter Canova, your host for Quantum Spirituality on Dream Vision 7 Radio and TV Network.
The First Souls Trilogy, one of the most highly awarded fictional independent book series on the market, is a grand vision of human evolution. It chronicles the first spirit consciousness to enter the material world in three page-turning novels that introduce a new paradigm of reality based on genuine ancient wisdom and quantum science. These inspirational thrillers will force you to rethink the nature of the world in which we live. Visit the PeterCanova.com website for information and ordering. In a world facing annihilation, a miraculous African nun rises to become the first female pope through a web of war, murder, and betrayal. Loved by some, hated by many, she becomes the deadly target of Islamic terrorists and her own cardinals as she introduces a new vision that will either save humanity or accelerate its destruction. Four people must race against a nuclear holocaust to learn her astonishing secret. Pope Annalisa is available at PeterCanova.com, Amazon, and other online booksellers and bookstores worldwide.
What if dreams can diagnose your life? What if we can meet the love of our life in dreams? Join host Kat O'Keefe Canavas, the number one internationally best-selling author of Dreams That Can Save Your Life, written with Duke University medical doctor Larry Burke. Dreaming Healing is where we'll explore dreams, research, and interpret dreams from you, the caller. Dreaming Healing shows can be heard every Tuesday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern, with live shows on the first and third evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific Time on syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Come live your dreams out loud with Kat.
How did life start on Earth, and why is there so much suffering? Are we living in a simulated reality like the characters in the Matrix movie? Do parallel dimensions exist alongside ours, influencing our experience? What are the mysterious dark energies that penetrate our universe? Peter Canova folds space and time to bring the twin bookends of ancient wisdom and quantum science into a single focal point, answering these and many other deep mysteries of the creation. Quantum Spirituality can be heard every Tuesday at 10 a.m. and 10 p.m. Eastern and 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Pacific on syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. See the show where past and present merge to show us our future.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
We're back for our final segment of Quantum Spirituality. I want to remind everybody that you can listen to us online on your car on Bluetooth, or if you have Amazon Alexa, just say, Alexa, listen to Dream Vision 7 Radio. You know, I've gotten a couple of questions from people. One person has asked me that he saw me appear a few years ago in San Francisco on a panel with Greg Braden, and really liked the comments, and he wants to know if I'm still doing a lot of public speaking. Unfortunately, the answer is no, because I've been spending so much time writing my books and doing this podcast, in addition to the fact that I'm still a businessman and have those activities to keep me plenty busy. But I will plan to be on the road again when we introduce the Quantum Spirituality book, which is being published by Inner Traditions, and that should be out by spring of next year. So I expect to be active in the speaking circuit again. So you can watch for that. And another person had asked me that Pope Annalisa, they knew, was on Audible now as an audiobook, and they asked me if the 13th Disciple would be coming out soon. Don't have plans for it right now, but I'm sure it's going to be in the cards down the road a bit. That kind of leads me to segue to this. We have a lot of new viewers. We're getting them all the time here now. The show has really been growing rapidly, and some of them are, you know, not quite as familiar with the work as others. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to end this segment by playing a video clip that I put together about Pope Annalisa for those many of you who have written about the book after reading reviews and things like that, asking me certain questions about it. I can't really show you the clip from Audible. That's not legal. But I did have actually put a video clip together of my own of chapter one of Pope Annalisa before I signed the deal with Audible. So we're going to end this segment with that clip, and I hope you enjoy it. Before I show you the Pope Annalisa clip, I should tell you something about the First Souls Trilogy to put it in context. The First Souls Trilogy is about the first spirit consciousness to incarnate into physical form, into the material world. And it traces their lives over different epochs of history. The book was written in reverse order, but I'm going to describe it to you here in chronological order. The souls first incarnated in prehistoric times in an Atlantean-like civilization, which achieved a high degree of technology, owing to the fact that their soul power back in those days was undiminished. They were still almost like, almost godlike, because they still had the consciousness of coming from the higher dimensions. But over time, they became trapped in the physical forms and started to identify with physicality so that they could no longer go in and out of bodies. Some of them became trapped in bestial forms. The civilization they built became divided between those who remembered their origins and those who had completely given in to the material world. And eventually it caused a great civil war, which destroyed this early civilization. And that story is told in the last book of the trilogy, The Light of Distant Suns. There were other incarnations of these same souls during biblical times, during the time of Christ. And that story is told in the 13th Disciple. There is one major figure of these souls who kind of stands out. And her story is, you know, really kind of the story of all of us. So I'm not going to tip you off what her figure was during the biblical period. But the final book of the series, which is really the first book, because as I said, it was written in reverse order, is actually a Pope Annalisa. And this is where these souls who first came in the earth, that the book is tracing their incarnations. This is where they kind of reach, I guess you could say, a maturity. They become more fully evolved, and they also start to become aware of their past lives, of their past identities, as some of these barriers of being locked into the physical body and mind start to break down, and they start to recognize their identities. So anyway, if I take it from there, you can pick up on this clip here in Pope Annalisa. And I think that one of the things I should mention is the new book coming out, Quantum Spirituality. And in fact, this entire program, this entire podcast, really represents the years of research I did in spirituality and quantum physics that culminated in the writing of these books. So I decided at first to write some page-turning thrillers for entertainment purposes in order for people to start to understand something about these principles of quantum spirituality in an entertaining form, to absorb it in that form. But eventually I decided, you know, I really had accumulated so much that I wanted to share that I put it into the new non-fictional book, Quantum Spirituality, which will be out in the spring of 2022, according to my publisher. So do watch for that also. But I think if you have a chance to pick up the trilogy, I mean, almost everybody that's read it has really enjoyed it. It hardly has any negative reviews. And in fact, I'm working with a producer right now to get Pope Annalisa into a TV series. There was a movie deal that I had some years ago, but I backed out of it because honestly, the content was too much to be told in a 2 or 2.5 hour movie. So I really needed to get this into a, you know, TV series, like an 8 or 10 part TV series. And that's what we're aiming for. And with your prayers and a little bit of luck, someday we may hit that. Okay, so here's the clip for Pope Annalisa. Please enjoy it.
Pope Annalisa, Chapter 1. But in me was contained that I might recover the strength of the female. The Gospel of Bartholomew. Jerusalem, 2025. Father James McPherson knew he was being followed, and under no circumstances could he let himself be caught. What he carried was too valuable to fall into the wrong hands. McPherson was trapped in a section of Jerusalem's old city between the Church of the Redeemer and Mount Moriah, just north of the Wailing Wall, the Jewish holy site. Moriah rose above him directly to the east with the Golden Dome of the Rock and the Al-Aqsa Mosque above. The Mount of Olives, dotted with gnarly fir trees, sat 100 meters farther east, rising above the site of the ancient Temple Mount on Moriah. 10 minutes before, McPherson had met with a Palestinian Arab in the old city. The meeting was set up by none other than Hieronymus, the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem. The Patriarch was also of Palestinian ancestry, and he had many contacts in the West Bank and Arab quarters in Jerusalem. 2 weeks ago, an Arab had come to him purporting to have a fragment of a certain ancient document. He refused to say where he had obtained it, and he refused to show the document unless he was paid a large sum of money. All he told Hieronymus was two words, a person's name, written in Greek, at the head of the purported text. It was enough. Hieronymus quietly passed the news along to the keeper of the texts in Rome. The keeper had dispatched Father McPherson with the money to rendezvous with the man and make the exchange. McPherson was dressed like an Arab, his keffiyeh headpiece wrapped around to conceal his face. So sensitive was this meeting, so great the need for caution. The Arab had handed him the document, a single page that would alter history in the right hands. McPherson recalled his shock at seeing the first two words of the text written in Greek, Maria Magdalene, Mary Magdalene. Excerpts from the letter flashed across his mind. Mary Magdalene, by my hand is this written. The two shall become one again. The hidden shall be revealed. The secret church shall become visible. I shall return. The three alphas of God in my name. The first souls. And the God of this world shall be overthrown. The keeper had told him what to look for, and by those phrases, McPherson knew the text was genuine without needing to have it analyzed or dated. He handed the Arab a small fortune, then sealed the parchment in a tube which he placed in his briefcase. The keeper had wanted him to be vigilant, and he was, pausing periodically to peer around corners, eyes darting from side to side as he made his way to the main street. That was how he noticed the two men following him. Both were dressed in Western clothes, definitely not Arabs. McPherson could not be caught with a document. That would unravel everything. The streets in this part of the city were narrow, so taxis were seldom seen. He had hoped to make it to the main boulevard to find a cab and head straight for the Tel Aviv airport. He needed to reach Rome, but his pursuers had blocked his passage to the west. He realized they were now looking him straight in the eye. That was bad. They were not just following him anymore. They were readying to capture him. McPherson was in his 40s and still able to run. He retreated back toward the old city in a quick trot, trying to use the narrow, winding streets to lose the men. He had no idea where he was going, but he dodged in and out of alleys and side streets. Still hearing their running footsteps behind him, he redoubled his efforts. He came upon a merchant bazaar of street stalls and slowed his pace. Rows of cheap antique vase replicas lined the area in front of the stalls. No one was in the immediate area, so he took the tube out of his briefcase, slipped it into a vase depicting Jesus at the Last Supper, and marked its position in his mind. He glanced at the sign on the storefront behind the open stall. It said, Ali Wafa. McPherson resumed running, tossing his briefcase into an alley along the way. Darkness was falling, and he hoped the shadows would help him. But to his dismay, he rounded a corner to face a wide open area. He saw Mount Zion to his right, so that meant southwest. He must be at the southern edge of the old city, probably heading straight for the Dung Gate. There were no buildings ahead for cover, just an open expanse with crumbled ruins along the ancient Herodian Street at the southern base of the Temple Mount. His pursuers were coming at him from the north. The south and west posed more open space where they could run him down. He had one chance. If he made a sharp turn to the east, he might be able to gain the stone ramparts beneath the Al-Aqsa Mosque, where the lower wall of the old city bisected the higher wall of the Temple Mount plateau above. He had a chance if he could reach the mosque. He was dressed as an Arab, while his pursuers looked like Westerners or Israelis, and the locals wouldn't take kindly on Israelis chasing one of their own. McPherson put on an extra burst of speed. He looked back as he ran, and the two men were still keeping pace with him. After 15 minutes of running uphill, he was spent. He managed to reach the surviving wall of an ancient stone building on the flats below the high ramparts of the intersecting city and Temple Mount walls. He had to rest. He was temporarily out of view of his hunters. Multiple nooks and crannies, overgrown with grass, pockmarked the high walls. He spotted a deep, arch-shaped niche carved into the stone edifice. Whatever purpose it served originally, it was now a storage area for barrels and crates. Heavy iron bars covered the opening, but luck was with him. The rusty grill stood open, and he barely squeezed through. He closed the gate so it would appear locked, and he hid behind some barrels. If they searched inside, he was trapped, but he had to rest. Hopefully, his trackers would run past his location. Seconds later, he heard footsteps, and they paused close enough for him to hear the men talking. "Over that way," a voice said in Spanish. Thank God, it appeared they had passed him by. He waited for what seemed an eternity, then slowly crept forward and peered through the heavy metal grating. The way looked clear. While he had time, he pulled a pen and paper from his pocket and scribbled a short note. He placed the paper back in his pocket, then pushed against the iron gate as slowly and quietly as he could, opening it just enough to wiggle back outside. Which way to go? It was a dicey question. Backtracking would be the quickest route to the city, but his pursuers might catch him out in the open again. He looked around. About 100 feet away and 6 feet above the level where he stood, a metal stairway led to a landing between the end of the encircling old city wall and the face of the Temple Mount wall. The parapet of the mount wall stood about 20 feet above the landing, normally an insurmountable barrier, but once again fortune was with him. Temporary scaffolding covered the face of the wall, connecting the landing to the parapet. Thank God the walls were in need of constant maintenance. If he gained the parapet, he would be in the lower Temple Mount plateau, less than 50 yards from the mosque. He could then cut across the great square by the Dome of the Rock and descend down the western slope of Moriah. He ran toward the stairs, but momentarily froze when he heard a shout behind him. The men had emerged from the cover of a half-crumbled column some distance to the east. They must have been waiting to flush him out. The old stone blocks that formed the lower base of the stairs made perfect stepping stones, so McPherson scrambled up, jumped the metal railing, then turned east and ran up the rampart leading to the landing. His pursuers were younger and faster, however. He could hear their footsteps gaining ground on him. He was gasping for air as he reached the landing, and was only halfway up the scaffolding when the men arrived. McPherson climbed for his life, not pausing to look down. For a moment's lapse would be fatal. Things started coming to him now in slow motion. Arm slid over arm to grasp the metal bars with the languid reach of a swimmer doing the front crawl against the resistance of water. He clawed his way upward for an eternity. His vision and his awareness of all things around him collapsed and focused on the crenellated openings of the parapet above. He rose ever so slowly until suddenly a new world came into view. His head was at eye level with the concrete plaza on the plateau above. He could see people walking in the distance, people and safety from the danger in the abyss below him. He was going to make it. He was going to complete his mission. Then he felt it. Felt a hand grasp his ankle. He was vaguely aware of kicking to get free. He looked down to see one man's hand on his ankle and the second man reaching to grab his other leg. The downward drag grew heavier. His eyes tracked back to the plateau. He clutched the parapet, inches from a plane of existence that meant freedom and life. He glanced to the nearby southwest corner of the Temple Mount, the very place where Jesus was said to have rejected Satan after being offered the world. He looked one more time at the safe and unaware people in the short distance beyond, and he remembered the words of the Keeper, "Nothing in this world is as it seems." And he reminded himself of that. He realized his safety did not lie on that mount or in those people. His safety lay in something beyond. With both hands, McPherson thrust his body backward off the parapet. As he fell, he thanked God that he dispelled himself of his illusions. It did not carry them with him in the hour of his death. He let out one final scream of God's name in Arabic before he hit the rocks below with a crunching crack of oblivion. "You fool, you pulled too hard," one of the assailants said to the other. "No, the bastard pushed off. He killed himself," the other replied. They descended, then examined McPherson's body. They were searching for his briefcase or large documents, so they overlooked the small note in his pocket. Soon, the onlookers above, drawn over by McPherson's scream, started shouting at them in angry voices. They fled. Now they were scared, not of the crowd, but of going back to Rome empty-handed.
This ends today's segment of Quantum Spirituality, the show where the past and present merge to show us our future. Join us the first Tuesday of each month for cutting-edge information and informative new episodes. This show will be archived on the Quantum Spirituality Dream Vision 7 Radio Network website page, also accessible at petercanova.com. That's PETERCANOVA.com.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.